call the meeting to order then. Let's start with roll call.
Tim Owen Brockling.
Present.
Ron Musman.
Present.
Ron Lower. Crystal Walter. Diana Pagan. Arthur Kim.
Here.
Ryan Russell. Jennifer Cunningham.
Present.
Abby Huff.
Here.
We do have people in our audience who would like to introduce yourself. If you're here, house moving, but you can introduce yourself for the record.
Sure. I'm Dennis Andrews. I'm on the staff of Save CR Heritage, and I'm a retired house mover. I was a house mover here in Cedar Rapids for a good part of my adult life, and for a long time of it, I was the only local house mover, and I became aware that you had house moving on your agenda today, and I just thought I'd come down and drop in here and see what kind of things you were going to be discussing, and I don't know exactly what you're going to be referencing today, but I don't know. I'd like the opportunity maybe to be able to ask a question or offer something at that point, since I don't know exactly how the topic is going to come up on your agenda today. But that's up to you.
Okay, great.
Cindy Hanish, thanks for your heritage. Same agenda.
And I like your haircut. Okay. Has everyone had a chance to read over the last meeting's minutes? And if so, do I have if there are any questions, a motion to go through?
I'll move.
Okay, thank you for inviting Building Services to the meeting, and I think Kevin may show up here. He was in another meeting, the building official, but we appreciate the opportunity to kind of talk about this. As a little background, we see one or two structures moved every year almost in kind of like clockwork in the city. It usually requires a lot of city staff, so it's almost always about 30 days of review time. There's a lot of departments, six or more departments almost always have to review something of this nature. And then usually there's utilities. There's usually about six utilities that get involved. Some don't have anything to do, but they all want to, they're all part of that approval process. Let me go to the next slide. So again, the process is required or is complex. The required process is complex. One of the things you have to understand is that you have two sites and a route that all need approval. So the old site, that needs approval too. So what you're doing with that old site, we need to probably start there. And then you're removing that building, and that requires permits and approval. And then there's a route that we need to approve of. And then there's a new site that needs approval also. So they're fairly complex issues, and there's a lot of gears moving that all have to come together before approval is granted. We're really focused on safety and property infrastructure damage primarily when we first start looking at them. But you have to remember that we do want to know what's going to happen with the old property, and where you're moving the building to, that has to be code compliant. It's got to meet the zoning ordinance. Requires a hefty partnership with a bunch of entities. So not only are you partnering with utilities, but also city staff and bonded contractors in the right of way. There's a lot of people that you're partnering with. If you go to the next one. So by ordinance, it requires a registered and insured contractor. So it has to be registered by the state. The contractor has to be registered by the state, and the insurance has to meet the insurance requirements. We start with the structure that you're moving, and actually, to tell you the truth, we usually don't have a problem, because typically nobody wants to move a structure that's not fit to be moved. But that's the first step. We look at the structure, we say, is the structure, can we move it? Is it something that is, does it have termite damage or something like that? That could be a problem. I've not run into that in my career yet. But the ordinance also says, is it fit to be moved? And so if it was infested or something like that, we might want to work on remedying that before we moved it. Then we want to look at it, inspect it, make sure, have that approval in. Then you have to disconnect that house from all of the utilities. So that's a process. So you have six utilities that we have to have sign-offs on before you get approval. Six private utilities usually get involved. They send us an approval. And then also public utilities. So we want to protect the city sewer system and water system. So then we get to the new location. And first off, what you're moving, will it fit on the new lot? You know, and is it zoned appropriately? 100-year flood, setbacks, things of that nature. We want to look at that very carefully. Separate permits are then required for the new foundation, electrical service, water, sewer hookups, mechanical system changes, and then the road permits, right-of-way permits, and erosion control for all of those things are required. If you're making changes to the building, we typically see, you know, like, let's say you're adding a deck to the back or something of that nature. We want a separate permit for that. Those are usually later on, but we would want to know that before we approve it when it's going to the new location. So if you're, let's say you're expanding the footprint, we want to have a review of that to make sure that it's going to fit and we don't have zoning issues. And then also we're looking at off-street parking, hard surface driveways, things of that nature. One thing, the new foundation must be approved and inspected prior to the move. So there are times when in the past when we have not done that, and that has been a fairly significant issue with risk management. So we don't want to get into those issues. We want to work with you when you're moving a project, but we want to make sure that that foundation has been approved before we move it. And you can go to the next one. Oh, that's not me.
This is a slide I dropped in. This is related to the new zoning code, which was which went into effect January 1st of this year. And this is just a note that that code has specific language that specifies that a lot of the zoning standards can be waived if it's necessary to accommodate a historic building or moved building. So like while it does have to meet the zoning, there can also be a lot of exceptions made. So if it runs into a situation where, let's say, a 5-foot setback is required and that's not going to work for a moved building, there are ways to make that work to save a historic building.
So then we get to the next part that we would review would be the route. And the route is typically where most of the work is done. I'm currently reviewing a building move from the on the west side of the city, and he's been through three separate routes. And he's now on the third route, which looks very promising. It's significantly shorter, but it's significantly more money. So he's crossing a railroad that unfortunately has two railroad entities. And it's, railroads, and actually one of the railroads is really literally bigger than the state of Iowa, okay? They do more in commerce, and they're just literally a huge entity. So working with somebody like that is fairly difficult, and you have to get their approvals. And they have timetables, and so they want to make sure that when you're moving across this railroad crossing, that it doesn't impact them adversely. Also, there's infrastructure built into that rail crossing, and so it's going to cost that individual a significant amount to move that infrastructure, because this project is significantly wide. So he's going to have to move rail crossings. Not to really go off on this point, but that's significant because that actually affects the Department of Transportation also. So there's a whole bunch of entities that just got involved with the railroad crossing, and that's why, you know, we were working on other routes. We worked very hard. The city worked very hard. We had a lot of staff time in looking at other routes. He wanted to go across another bridge, and unfortunately the structure's too heavy. So that bridge, we gave him the option of hiring an independent engineer to come and take a look at it. But bridges they're a significant issue with house moving when you get to bigger structures. You know, we've had a lot of them where they're smaller structures. If the weight's not that great, it's not that big a deal. But when you get to a bigger structure like this, it can be significant. So that's an issue. As you can see, anything that crosses the Cedar River requires city council input. So that has to go on count. First, the engineering has to look at it, and then it has to go to the city council. It's written into the ordinance. Apparently somebody, so the moving ordinance was written a long time before me, 1986, in October is when it was passed. Apparently somebody moved something across a bridge and damaged it. And the city council at that time, when this ordinance was written, was not pleased. So that's been there way before me. I don't have the ability to jump around that. That's written into the ordinance. So if you cross it, if you go across the Cedar River, it's going to take a while to get approvals. Okay. And then remember, you're going to partner with law enforcement to direct traffic. So you're paying law enforcement officers to be there. Sometimes, you know, we had one guy move one from Linn County, and he happened to have a deal with Linn County Sheriff's Office, and they did the whole thing through the whole city and out in the county, and it was a great, it really worked out. I don't know what he paid them, but that was a really nice feature. The Cedar Rapids Police Department didn't have to have too much involvement with that. And then, so when you're moving, as you know, the lower lines are internet, cable, things like that. So those organizations now charge a significant amount. You're going to have to partner with those organizations right away in almost anything you move. So that's IMON, MediaCom, CenturyLink. And then as you get higher, you get into Power Lines, Alliant, Linn REC. As I said, rail crossings. From the city standpoint, you're going to have multiple city departments that look at the approval. So it starts typically with traffic and then forestry, utilities, engineering right away, and then PD wants to approve the route also. Those are the people. So my job when we get a permit application in is to get herd all of those individuals together and get them to look at the route. And we're currently working on that right now on that project I was talking about. When you get to like 15 feet is the height that we set traffic signals. Now, if you can weave through the intersection, it's no big deal. If the building is small enough, and that happens, you know, a significant number of times. If you got a big building that can't weave through the intersection, or there's some other reason you can't, and you're over 15 feet, you're now moving traffic signals, and that's a bonded contractor. 18 feet is typically the bare minimum for power lines. So if you get above 18 feet, typically you're going to have to move some power line. As you get higher and higher, you get to higher voltages, and that gets even more expensive. And then ITC might get involved with a transmission line. That would be very expensive, but that rarely ever happens. The other thing is we want to be aware of large businesses, fire stations, and hospitals. So if we're moving in front of one of those, so we had one move a few years ago in front of Rockwell Collins. What we did was we reached out to Rockwell and said, hey, there's going to be a move in front of your building. Is there a better time than, you know, we don't want to do it right when shift ends and 2,000 people are leaving, right? That's probably not a good idea. But we also want to think about the impact we have on fire stations and hospitals and anything else that might be emergency related. You can go to the next one. So let's say we've gotten all the way down, we got the route done, and everybody's approved, and now we're on the moving day. And so the date and time can sometimes be very critical. We've pushed some moves so that we didn't affect traffic or something else. We've notified all of those affected, meaning the entire neighborhood gets a letter. And we do that on purpose. We moved a house. We didn't think it would impact a street that was a dead end, and the house was moving on the corner of that street. But we blocked that street for, it was probably an hour and a half by the time they got the building turned and in place. Guy down on the end wanted to go to work. And we got feedback from that individual, and we really want to make sure everybody knows. So that's just common courtesy so that, you know, a citizen can get to work. We put up no parking signs so that we don't have issues with parked cars in areas that require it. So that notice goes out 48 hours in advance. And then you've hired a bunch of utility contractors to come out and work with you to move stuff. And so they're usually all grouped up and ready to go. common items that you move, obviously, are cable and internet. But remember, street signs and mailboxes are commonly moved on moves, and they need to be put back in place. We did have some feedback from some neighbors on a move over on the west side a couple of years ago about mailboxes, and we need to make sure that that the mover is doing that appropriately and the mailbox gets put back appropriately. You've also got a bunch of PD or other law enforcement there helping you through intersections, and they're all ready to go. And then you have bonded private contractors for traffic signals and forestry. Now, forestry, if you can't find an approved contractor for forestry, forestry will do it if they have time. And we have used that option. But remember, with the ash trees, they have a significant schedule right now, and they don't have a lot of extra time for this sort of item. What we want to do is make sure that any damage to trees, that we're trimming stuff appropriately before we get there, and that we don't damage. And then also, we've removed a lot of little street trees that were just planted. We did that, I think that was last year. Several were removed during the move, and then just had to be, you know, a contractor had to be hired to replant those. And then remember, anything that we break. So if we broke it, we probably have to fix it. So sidewalks, things like that. So after the moving day, the other thing that we sometimes forget about is we have a foundation that's not only a hazard, but we have to remove. That has to be removed appropriately, and all of the items, all of the concrete has to come out. And then that's inspected, and the site is either restored, or if there's development going on the site, then the appropriate activity can start. By our ordinance, the structure must be insured by the mover until it's set on the foundation. So if we leave it sit for more than a day or two, your mover has to make sure their insurance is still in effect. So it's not real estate until it's on a foundation. And when it's not real estate, just your normal real estate insurance will not cover the building or the damage it could potentially do to somebody else's property or injure someone. The structure must be secured and enclosed in 10 days by the ordinance. So then the new location is going to have, you know, a new service, typically new wiring, new plumbing hookups, and typically the plumbing systems are probably going to get new venting. You almost always never move the furnace because it was in the basement. So almost always we see a mechanical permit and a new furnace come out. So that's another mechanical permit. And then any framing that you're doing in the basement, so stairs, that kind of thing, that should be inspected and installed. Any new remodeling work would be associated with another permit. And then remember, you'd want to complete the site work and final zoning items on the site after the moving day. So from a big picture, just we want to move a building. Let's look at items to consider. Obviously, first, is the building fit to be moved? Secondly, is it on this side of the river? It's much more difficult to go across the river or a bridge. Is the structure tall or wide? Does the route have issues? Is it on a very narrow street? Is that going to be a super difficult thing? These are things that as you look at it, just, you know, you could eyeball whether the street is really narrow and it's a big house. So you'll need a code compliant site for the house to sit on. So something that is big enough for the house to sit on, and then does it have utility hookups? So if you have to do a new tap, that's significantly expensive. If there's a tap already there, that's usually just a sewer permit. So those aren't, that happens in the city every day, but new taps are significantly expensive. And then most of the other items will need to be brought up to code as you're moving back into that house and reworking it. So I condensed down what really takes a lot of work and a long time into a very, very small PowerPoint presentation for you. I fully expect that we'd have a lot of questions, so I'm here for questions.
So basically, what you're saying, the cheapest way to do this is to bring in a military-grade helicopter, right?
You are right on track. That is the best way.
So let's say we had something come before this board, which has happened, and Safe Sierra probably moved the last one in the, what was that last house?
The Frankie House,
thank you. And we put a 60-day hold.
Mm-hmm.
What's the average time from the day we put the hold, and if they wanted to move it or someone else wanted to move it, what's the average time before actually moving it?
Well, if we talk about average time, it's a lot longer than that. But you could, I mean, you could move something in 60 days if it was an easy move. I mean, we did a garage in 60 days this year already.
You get all those permits and all that stuff in 60 days.
Yeah, but that was a garage. You'd have to have a foundation contractor ready to go and a site ready to go, and know where that's at and have it thought out. It's typically, I would say the average is actually closer to 120 days. And the reason for that is somebody's looking for a site, looking to acquire a site, and then get their contractors. And, you know, if you're really serious about it, you got to have that site ready. And know what will fit on that site. And then it's getting subcontractors in. This year was tough, so if you wanted to do a foundation right now, you might get one in because we're in August. But if you wanted to do this in May, there were no foundation contractors available in May for a long time. They were all doing, you know, new single families because that's what their bread and butter is. It's very difficult to pull them off of those type projects. And they're typically not available early in the spring. Those can be difficult.
Any other questions?
Can I just ask if we have somebody who's interested in moving a home, can we get that PowerPoint to send to them?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it'll be posted on the HPC site.
If I can add. So most of my PowerPoint came from notes that I've had and experience that I've had as the one who issues these permits within the city and herds everybody together. But it was really the meeting that we had, that was a few months ago, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But this PowerPoint came a lot from those notes. So, you know, more than happy to give you that information and help you with that. Okay?
We've had a few inquiries.
So, sure.
It'd be nice to...
You know, our goal is to get out in front of it so that we can get all of the approvals, but the more you know ahead of time, getting the approvals helps us. So that's, you know, there's so many things that happen all at once and all have to come together. The route and the site and everything has to get together.
I have the same question. I assume that you'll be putting that as part of the agenda minutes and
yep.
notes and that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so when we post the presentation online after the meeting, the school will all be there.
Okay, Duncan, so let's say we have a house that we is historical significant. We put a 60-day hold, say Sierra or friends or just anyone wants to move it, but they run into a string of problems. Is there a time limit that has to be done once we start? Not the actual move, just the process of moving. It took 12 months. Takes 12 months is not a deadline.
No, not a deadline from our perspective. Once we issue the permit, the day of the move is set in stone because PD's gonna, you know, all of these entities are going to be involved and want to you know, be there to direct traffic, right? But the process, you know, the one I'm currently working on, I think he came in 18 first to talk about it. So we've been working through routes with that entity for a long time, trying to figure out how to move that house.
Does Kevin have anything that he'd like to add?
Oh, hi. Put me on the spot like that.
Yeah.
You know, what I would say is, you know, we do recognize this is a very lengthy and difficult process, but, you know, we just try and get people through that process, but I think everybody has to understand that there are a lot of obligations that put on either the mover or the person moving the house, maybe not necessarily the mover themselves, but and it just takes coordination, and it takes time, and it takes communication. You know, we look at it from the standpoint of your question of if you had a house to move, you know, how quick could you do it? I think the land banking is what's the part of this that's always the question. You have to have a land mover to
it. I was just wondering, your permit. permits expired, you had to reapply for permits if there was permits for like moving electrical, but then this took longer, so now the permit for electrical just dropped off because it's a 30-day. That was kind of what I was thinking. Or
a permit of that, a permit of the that nature for like electrical would be good for a year.
Did you have any questions?
No, I thought it was a very good presentation. From my experience of dealing with Cedar Rapids, it represented it really well. I always found Cedar Rapids very cooperative in any house move, and the only thing I guess I would say is it would be nice if there was one person in the city that you could go to kind of had the experience to act as a coordinator, especially for some of the house movers that come in from out of town. But I knew everybody after a short time of dealing with them. I knew who to go to and to talk to about each individual thing, and it really wasn't a big deal. I thought Cedar Rapids was always very cooperative about it, more so than some communities.
Can I just add to that? I think one of the things that I would say is we tend to be, you know, maybe more so probably than we were 10 years ago, I'll say, or even when I first got here 8 years ago, to shepherd these more through because we understand there's a huge coordination. I mean, we tend to be that person, although we are running around to 5-6 different entities within the city.
Right.
In some cases, even the utilities. But I don't want to say we're the primary contact because I don't know that I would say that we're the only contact, but obviously we have to rely on all the other departments for their expertise. But just because it's a permit, we tend to be that person, maybe indirectly, or that entity, I should say. And it's not, you know, I don't want anybody to think we don't get frustrated too, because there's a lot of times where we're going, we need this thing to get this figured out. And sometimes, you know, Doug and I talked about this presentation at length, and, you know, one of the things, I don't know if it came up because I can't remember, but we've had routes change, you know. We had it all figured out, and then the route changes at the last minute, and you sort of have to almost start over, but the moving date didn't change, you know, so you're sort of funneling all that through again. And so it does take coordination, and I think, to your point, I think it would be great, but I just don't know if it's necessarily feasible to have one, you know, one point of contact for all that.
Yeah, that's true. The worst part about all of it, a lot of the time, is finding the right contact at some of the utility companies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can play phone tag with different, you know, with the cable companies or electric company, or they used to always have phone. You used to have to get a sign off from the phone whenever all the phone was buried. I don't know if that's still on the permit anymore now, but it used to be on there. You had to have a sign off from the phone company in Cedar Rapids, and everything the phone had was buried by that point. You know, it's like, why do I need to sign off from the phone? But I guess, you know, it's just getting the contacts and stuff, and once you're established with them or you're used to dealing with them, it's not bad. Cedar Rapids has always been really cooperative, I think.
I know we talked about this when we met, 2 months ago, but what was like the average cost? I know we talked about that.
Well, so I put together some ballpark numbers, and actually I apologize, I didn't bring that with me, but
oh, okay.
So if you were doing a house move, and by the time you do, you know, new service, new water, you get new sewer and water hookups, and the foundation. So a foundation today is, you know, like the cheapest foundation I can come across. It's maybe $20,000, something like that. By the time you get everything else in there, you're probably close to $40,000, maybe pushing higher than 40, and I probably am forgetting something in there. I'm kind of speaking out of turn. I don't price those things on a regular basis anymore. I used to for a living, but when I came to the city, that's not my job anymore. It's to make sure it's code compliant. But what we see from pricing structures, just, you know, when we talk to builders about valuations, that's typically what they cost. Those can vary wildly. You know, if we had one last, or a couple of years ago, where they reused the sewer system. Well, that saved them, I bet you that saved $6,000-$7,000 right there. Because you don't have to, you know, go out, do a new tap. You're in the right-of-way. That's a right-of-way permit, but you're also repaving a portion of that street when you do a new tap. So that's significantly expensive. There are other things that can push the cost, too, from the site. And that's not, well, I'm not talking about the actual moving costs. So those are, this is just the new foundation. And then remember, we've got to remove that old foundation. Now, oftentimes when you're, the projects you're working on, somebody wants to do something with that site. A lot of times they're going to tear the house down, so working that foundation demolition into their scope of work makes sense. So they may take that over for you, and the disconnections too. So those disconnections can be expensive sometimes also, but from your perspective, you may not have those issues.
And what we don't realize on this commission because of our age is, Mark was here, he could tell us, but back in the 1910s, 20s, and 30s, they moved lots of houses. I think there were like 2 or 3 moving companies in the city that did it. It just got more expensive, mm-hmm. and it started to get, I think if I remember Mark said, it was the 20s and 30s that they did a lot.
There was always at least 2 house moving companies in Cedar Rapids from 1900 until late 1980s. Always, they kept 2 house moving companies busy. They made their whole livelihood basically locally.
Does anyone have any more questions?
Lauren, could you address incentives? I know you had mentioned there's basically just one.
Yeah, so this past year, when we updated the economic development incentives, we added another kind of portion of the historic preservation portion of economic development incentives, which basically allows, if you're moving a structure or incorporating historic structure into the development project, that you can get TIF or rebate, or urban rebate, for that project. So basically we would take the, you know, the assessed value of the lot that you'd be moving it to, and then the increase in value of moving that house there and, you know, renovating or whatever else, and then that would be the kind of increment tax that you would get back. So I don't know if I explained that well, but that's another
but you gotta pay it up front first before you get it back.
Yeah, that's how TIF works. But it's definitely helpful and a great conversation tool with developers who are, you know, looking at a project and see the historic structure. And if we can have that conversation early, that's part of our incentives, and they might consider either moving it or incorporating it. And
stay, but I'm sure you've got other things to do. But
there's cookies.
Thank you. That's very interesting.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yep. Thanks for that.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's good. Okay, we'll move that. Action number 4, action item. Demolition and facade structure modification reviews, 1895 33rd Avenue Southwest, primary structure demolition.
Okay. So the house that you're looking at today, it was built in 1920. And as you can see, we have kind of a large aerial view. This is like a, is it a farm or?
It's a tree farm.
It's
an orchard.
Yeah, so we're only talking about, if you see that little red rectangle, the one house. The rest of the structures are remaining on the property. The condition is considered normal on the city assessor, but the property has not been surveyed for historic significance. Here's a current photo. It's kind of hard to see in this light, but. So because we don't have any really evidence for historic significance and it's a poor candidate for local landmarking, we're recommending immediate release for this.
What are the other buildings that are on?
So there you can,
this one?
So right off to the left, that's probably the largest accessory structure. It's a barn. There's another structure with the white roof to the right of the house, and then if you go to the aerial, there's one then further back. So I think there's 3 accessory structures total, maybe 4.
I wish Kevin was still here, because I know at one time, I thought they were not allowing a house to come down without the other structures with it. Do you know anything?
Yes, so that's correct. They are planning on building a new house.
Okay, so yeah, they're going to use existing structures for the new house. Okay. Is that still in effect where if there's a garage?
Correct. So you cannot remove a house and maintain a shed or garage or any other accessory structure on a parcel. At least in a, I think there's some qualifiers there. Maybe on an ag property you could do that, but you know, like in the normal kind of built up area, that's not allowed.
Well, Mark did not reach out to me, so I'm assuming he does not need pictures. Usually he calls me, so I'm guessing he doesn't need to photograph this. Are there any questions in regards to this?
And I apologize for that. I took that picture this morning, but it did not look bad from the sidewalk.
Yeah. I kind of tried to do some look. I don't think that definitely isn't the original house on the property. You know, there would have been probably something, probably like the second house in that. So they're just gonna put their house there.
They build it properly.
Yeah, definitely not a farmhouse.
Okay, we'll move to item 5, discussion items.
The only thing, I don't know if this is really the best here, but Jennifer had brought up at the last meeting that there was 1714 Blake Boulevard. They had a, I guess it was black, the assessors it was red, but a wood paneled door, front door, that was removed, and a flat wood door was put in its place. Front doors, the removal of front doors does not require a building permit, so this is one of those areas where, you know. So I did reach out, got a hold of the property owner, I am now waiting for a call back from his property manager to see if there's a way they can go ahead and replace with a similar door. So, but I just wanted to give an update on that since that was brought to our attention.
How do doors get passed by a owner? At least in the historical districts.
So what they should be doing is, so when we send out the newsletter, we include in there that with or with anything you're doing to the outside of the house, whether or not it requires a building permit, you should be applying through HPC. But because it doesn't require a building permit, it's harder to catch. Like usually we get our applications, they come through building services, they go to us. So it's kind of something we just need better education and reminders that even if you're doing something where you don't need a building permit, like, please reach out to community development. We would bring it to the commission for COA or CNME.
You do need a permit for windows.
Yes. But something like shutters, an awning, doors, you know, those don't require...
Are they considering a door to be more cosmetic than structural?
I don't know the reason for that. I mean, why it doesn't. Probably because you're not, I don't know. I don't even want to speculate. I guess I would say it's probably health and safety related, why you need building permits to begin with. So in this case, a door, you know, I'm sure it could fall off the hinges and hurt someone, but that's probably unlikely. So most people, you know, can do that by themselves. And so there's no need. You're not impacting the structure, is my guess, which is why you don't why it's not required.
I'm wondering if we could visit... possibly in the historical districts or local landmarks that they would require a permit, because that's the eye to a building, in my opinion. And we have caught people changing the size of the door frames.
Which that does require a building permit.
Yeah. No, but they don't tell you. If you don't need a permit, you don't know. I mean, Bob Grafton brought it before. He found the old door.
Right, but if you're changing the size of the opening, then we would require a permit, and they couldn't get that permit until they got approval from us for that. So,
but But I think what they do is slide it by because they don't need a permit, so they think it's okay to go ahead and do it if they have to make shift to make the hole bigger or smaller.
Right, but we could, like, penalize them for doing that.
For doing that.
Versus a door, we can't. Like, just changing out a door, not changing the opening. That makes sense.
Okay, I just think in historical districts, the door is the entry to a historical home. I think that, just in historical areas and landmarks, I really think they should need a permit for that. I mean, it's key part of the whole house. I wonder what... I'm going to have people that did our research when we did Chapter 18 look at the cities that we reviewed, which was Aurora, Denver, and Dubuque, and we revamped and see what they have for their doors. Because to me, I don't want to be a stickler, but to me, the door is probably one of the things you walk through to get into the building. Mm-hmm. In a non-historical district, it's not that big of a deal, but like in Jennifer's case, it is a big deal because it completely changed the look of that historical house. And yet, if they don't want to do anything, you reach out and say, no, we like what it is. There's nothing they can do. I think we should have a little more for what kind of windows to use and what kind of brick to use on their chimneys or what it has to look like. I would think the door is a key point. Am I outside the box, or does anyone agree with it?
I agree. Mm-hmm. I just, from a building perspective, I would assume that door is cosmetic as opposed to the frame, which would be structural. But I completely agree that it does make a difference. There should be some way that we can... It shouldn't be that you drive by a place and go, oh yeah, they all changed their doors.
Yeah.
We should probably look into that. I feel like there's got to be a way to...
I can talk to Kevin about, you know, what the... what potential ramifications of doing that are. But yeah, I can talk to him about that.
I just have a question. I was just talking to the building owner. So there's a historic building owner in Czech Village who is going to be making some changes. Does that come through HPC?
It depends on what it is.
Okay.
So if it's over 50 and in a National Historic District, then there are certain things that would need review.
Okay.
Just depends on what the... So as an example, the improvements Bob Schaefer is doing to the Czech Cottage not need review at all.
It did not?
No. The property that... What is it? Lost and Found?
Yeah.
So that building did need review. So the difference was on a roadway.
Yeah.
The front facade, any changes there. So they were, with Lost and Found, they were getting into framing.
Yeah.
So it has to do with, you know, is it getting into framing? Is it changing the pitch of the roof?
I have the definition in front of me if
adding
you want.
Space,
so,
taking away space.
Yep, so it's a facade structure modification is what needs review in the National District. So that's on a facade while facing a public street or right-of-way. Adding floor area to the building or structure, or adding another wall which encloses the original wall from view. Also, on a facade wall facing a public street right-of-way, removing existing above-ground structure consisting of any but not limited to the following: wall studs, wall framing, beams, masonry, etc. Does not include alternatives to exterior materials such as siding, wood, stucco, and also permanent alteration to the pitch of a roof. Any of those things would count. So I think for that case, they were adding a door, but it wasn't on the side that was facing the public right of way.
So Bob, he got the Main Street Challenge grant, so that's who I was talking to. And part of that was redoing the siding on the Czech Cottage. So that doesn't, or that does come through HPC?
That does not.
It does not.
The siding.
Yeah.
Okay.
Siding is not included.
Okay. And then he's working on some of the, it's got that weird porch thing, veranda, mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever it's called.
Yeah, he's removing that.
Trying
to restore it back to where
So that none of that comes through HPC.
Correct.
Okay, that's what I told him, but I'm like, oh, I have a meeting tonight, let me double check.
Yeah.
So, okay.
6, announcements. A, 6A, Beaver Woods Intensive Survey Open House.
Just as a follow-up to the presentation at the last meeting, the consultants are going to have an open house for the Beaver Woods Survey on September 5th at Grantwood Elementary School. It's at 6 p.m. And we're sending out letters to everyone who's in the area that's going to be surveyed. And also, there's going to be a press release going out early next week about the project. The consultant will just give a brief presentation and then answer any questions. And then towards the end of the project, there will be an open house for the results. So I can send the commission an email reminder with the location and date. Yep, location, date, and time. It's at 6, from 6 to 7.
And where did you say, Grantwood?
Yep.
Okay. 6B, November meeting date change.
So Tim brought up that our November meeting is on Thanksgiving, and I think it almost always is. So based on that conversation, we internally wondered about changing starting in, because we also have this issue with December, even though it may not be Christmas, that week is usually a wash. So what we were wondering is if the commission would want to entertain, beginning in January, changing the meeting dates to the first and third Thursday of the month. That eliminates Thanksgiving and Christmas. And what is it, every 7 years, 4th of July might be an issue. So, I mean, there aren't any other conflicts. 4th of July and New Year's would be the two that
once in a while would come up.
I was going to ask, does that mean we lose a meeting each year?
No, so right now it's the 2nd and the 4th.
Is it the 2nd
Thursday?
I thought it was every other week, sorry.
Yeah, and so it's...
calendar feels
all... Yep, Thanksgiving is always the 4th Thursday, so we were like, that's not the best day to schedule a meeting for. It's going to come up every year.
Is that going to make our days between permits? We have like 15 days, I think. Is that going to mess
still be the same amount of time.
Yeah, it doesn't change that.
December on the 4th week and then January on the 1st week.
Oh, yeah, so that transition would be...
Yeah, that might
we'd
be
a little odd.
Where we would have meetings.
I believe last year we canceled our meeting, the last one in December, because there wasn't much, and, you know, it was the week of Christmas, so...
Yeah, I think...
Could happen
Christmas
again.
Christmas is on a Wednesday this year, so... It would be
the day after.
That's not specified in Chapter 18.
It is not specified in the bylaws or Chapter 18. Actually, one of the two says that we need to meet at least quarterly.
And I think the CLG agreement is we have to meet twice a year. So we're doing that as well.
Yeah. So if we changed it, we'd be meeting the first week and the third.
Third, yep.
Instead of the second and the fourth.
Yeah. So I think for purposes of today, I think the first is just a... you know, we can shift for this November. That's probably one everyone can agree upon now, and we can send some now so people who are not here. But then we can always bring it up at the next meeting to more formally discuss changing it to the first and third.
I asked about this because I spoke way out with my business, and if we like last year, I had to do it by phone.
We were talking about the 21st.
I had it on mute.
For this Thursday.
Is that the third Thursday?
It is.
Yeah, I think so.
I have a work obligation the first Thursday of every month that would conflict.
Okay.
I'm not sure if we need to go to all that or if we just go through the days that are holidays and rearrange that appointment for that meeting. Have it on a Wednesday instead of a Thursday, or does anyone else have conflicts with first and third?
We have four people that aren't here, so
I guess the other thing we could do is the week of Thanksgiving, maybe do the Tuesday of that week instead of the Thursday, as long as that doesn't conflict with council. I assume the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, people might be traveling and things. That might not be
And there's a potential that there won't we had a thing to discuss too.
Yeah, and I mean, if we cancel, we cancel, but if there's a demo.
We've done that before.
I'd have to look if that's still allowed in the, if that's still allowed.
Like everyone by phone?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I know that's come up in the past with other city boards and commissions. Just have to look at that. So I guess that's something we can just put on, you know.
Could we keep it as a discussion item so people can look at their schedules? But could we pick a time for this Thanksgiving so I can get
my schedule
changed? Otherwise, I'll let Ron take the meeting and I'll just phone in again. And I can do that as well.
So an option would be November 21st, so it'd be the week before. Although, Jennifer, that sounds like that would... Well, that would be the set with that. Yeah. The third Thursday would be...
Third.
Okay.
That would also make 2 weeks in a row with meetings. Because we have one on 14.
What if we just canceled that meeting? Make a holiday.
We could, as long as there's no demos where we run into that 15-day.
Yeah.
But what we could do is... What if we scheduled, like, a tentative makeup meeting? Maybe the following week, December 5th?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I probably have to go count days, but if we canceled the one that's on Thanksgiving and then did the 5th and the 19th of December, so the 1st and 3rd, then we would avoid Christmas week, and Jennifer, you'd have conflict one of the days. But
I'm at that point in November, I'm going to have a conflict regardless, because that's my major conference that I go to.
Okay.
November meeting.
It would work like 15 days wise to do the 5th. I just counted.
Okay, and then to do the 5th and the 19th of December instead of the 12th and the 26th, because I assume no one's going to want to do HPC the day after Christmas either, right? So. Yeah, so let's look at.
Recap, so go back to November.
So cancel November 28th and then change December to December 5th and 19th instead of the 12th and the 26th.
So cancel Thanksgiving and move it to December 5th.
Yep.
Does that seem plausible for everybody?
We'd be missing one meeting, essentially.
Yep.
We're all not going to do this until 2 weeks prior, and by then most of us have schedules already set in stone. I don't know why we didn't work out that way last time. I think everyone made it to the meeting except me. So that works for me, if I think.
General question, if we shift all of our meetings, like we said, do we need a motion? Do we need to vote on? And like, at what point do we need to like make things official?
So if we were going to do that, I think it would just be probably be an action item.
Okay.
Yeah.
I personally am for keeping them the 2nd to 4th because it fits the schedule that I've got built in for me personally.
Okay.
I would just assume change the holidays, but do it several months prior so we're not
So we can do this again like in December or January next year too. That way it's far enough.
Yeah, I think in December is when we schedule the meetings for the entire coming year, so we can just keep that in mind and figure it out.
I was going to say, and for the public or any of our other attendees, they're pretty much that might know our schedule, so changing it might disrupt them a little bit too. So.
And I'm good December 5th as of right now. I'll just block it out as a city.
Okay. And we'll send something out to the rest, just to everyone as a reminder, so.
Okay, any other questions on that? That sounds like a good deal. Okay, so number 7, certificate of material effect updates.
Okay, so these were issued between the 8th and the 21st. The first one you might remember. That was our second to last, I think, local landmark. So it's a garage roof replacement. And then 1509 Park Ave, this was a fence. And then the last one, 326, they did the work without a permit Fortunately, they used wood. So what they did is it replaced the deck and the stairs. It was wood. They replaced it with wood. If you drive by, you'll see what was replaced because it hasn't been painted yet. I did talk to the homeowner, and her contractor told her it had a sit, had a cure for a time period, so she will be painting it. So,
no railings were replaced or anything?
I believe there were some there. It was all wood. But when you drive by, you can tell.
Does that interfere with the new zoning with it being so many inches high?
So that's on the building department to... I'm assuming they're going to go out and inspect to make sure it was done properly. Yeah, that's not, you know, that's not our role. So that was it. So that one you did not have in the packet. 326 that came about. I think it was Monday or Tuesday.
Okay, and I apologize under announcements. I didn't ask if anyone else had any announcements. Okay, any questions on material effect?
When someone does work like this without a permit, are there fines or like what's associated with it to keep people from
10-year prison term?
Just doing it.
So,
like, why does that person care?
They have to right.
So
I have to talk to you, Adam.
Well, I can confirm this with Kevin, but they do still pay for the permit fee.
And I believe they pay twice, like double the permit fee. I believe I would have to double check that, but so if the permit was going to be 50, now it's 100.
Yeah, and they run the risk of if they didn't do something to code. So there's that extra cost on them.
The problem we have is a house on Fifth Avenue, southeast. They didn't get a permit. And, or maybe they, I can't remember if they got a permit or didn't, but they ended up, they said it was for a remodel. They put the whole house down except the chimney and the foundation. And all they got fined was the cost of the permit, double the cost of the permit, which we were all outraged on the board at the time because it doesn't even look like. And it doesn't fit in with the neighborhood because that's not a historical area, but still, it could be.
And just to kind of reiterate that this is not a, doing work without a permit is not a local district issue, unfortunately. It's happening all over the city.
Oh, yeah.
So, I think we did in the last newsletter, that's one of the things we try to stress is that make sure, you know, you get a building permit.
And there's nothing from the HPC side of like building services that can find because it's a historic district or anything like that.
Okay. And we had a lady that came in tears on Park Avenue because she got all the windows put in, and I won't name the name of the company, but the window company professional, they didn't get a permit. They said it slipped through the cracks. Cracks. And I can't talk to anybody. I thought it didn't. It was a long meeting. They ended up, the window company, taking everything out and reusing it somewhere else to put wood because she was in tears. She had already spent her money. So even professional companies don't always get permits, which we really stress to them in the future to please. Is it the responsibility, if the window company wouldn't have got the permit, then does that landowner have to do it? Someone's got to get it.
Property owner.
That's negotiable with whoever you're advocating.
Yeah.
So that was really a sticky one. Thank God, towards the end of the meeting, they said we'll take them out and replace them with the front. So, and she cried, and we all felt horrible, but we had to stick to them. Okay, any other questions on either 6 or 7? Do I have a motion for number 8?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? So we're doing canceling Thanksgiving, we're doing December 5th, correct?
And 19th.
And
19th.
No. Yep. I'll send out an email tomorrow, just so everyone has it. All right, I guess we can stop the recording.